Let's read Belgic Confession, Article 12, The Creation. Belgic Confession 12. We believe that the Father, by the Word, that is, by His Son, hath created of nothing the heaven, the earth, and all creatures as it seemed good unto Him, giving unto every creature its being, shape, form, and several offices to serve its Creator, that He doth also still uphold and govern them by His eternal providence and infinite power for the service of mankind, to the end that man may serve his God. He also created the angels good to be His messengers and to serve His elect, some of whom are fallen from that excellency in which God created them into everlasting perdition, and others have, by the grace of God, remained steadfast and continued in their primitive state. The devils and evil spirits are so depraved that they are enemies of God and every good thing to the utmost of their power, as murderers, watching to ruin the church and every member thereof, and by their wicked stratagems to destroy all, and are therefore by their own wickedness adjudged to eternal damnation, daily expecting their horrible torments. Therefore we reject and abhor the error of the Sadducees, who deny the existence of angels and spirits, and also that of the Manichees, who assert that the devils have their origin of themselves, and that they are wicked of their own nature, without having been corrupted. Now, in our study of angels, in connection with Belgic Confession 12, we looked first at their creation, their nature, and their number. Then we looked at their classification. We have their ranks, principalities, powers, thrones, and dominions. Then we looked at cherubs and seraphs last week. Before we leave that, I'd like to make two quick points. Number one, Ezekiel was a priest who, because of his being taken captive into Babylon, never actually saw the cherubs in Solomon's temple. And it was when he was just over 30 years old, when he would have been installed into the priesthood, that God gave him visions in Ezekiel 1, and then chapter 10, and then chapter 41, with cherubs in them. And of course, now he sees the cherubs. And then a second point, as regard these cherubs, also called living creatures in Ezekiel and especially now Revelation 4, if you want to read more about that, see Herman Hoekseman's Behold, He Cometh, his commentary on Revelation, pages 159 to 162. Now tonight, our treatment on the classification of the angels goes beyond principalities and powers and cherubs and seraphs to the archangels, which is another aspect of the rich angelic world and a truth that comforts and assures us of God's care for us. I should specify more that we're not going to deal with the devil, the ruler of the angels that fail. We're going to deal with good archangels. So let's start then with the one angel who is most directly and obviously a named archangel. Who is he? Michael. The passage. The passage that
Moses read.
No.
Well, there's a battle in heaven.
In Revelation 12, he's not called an archangel there either. The passage which uses the word archangel and Michael is Jude 9. Jude 9, that's the first passage we're going to consider together. Jude 9 states, "Yet Michael, the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a reeling accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke thee." By the way, there are some, even within Orthodox Christendom, who equate Michael the archangel with Christ. That was the view of Martin Luther. Calvin favoured that view too. He wasn't just as dogmatic on it. John Gill, Michael is Christ. Patrick Fairburn and the German commentator, whom I personally like, Ernst Wilhelm Hengstenberg. But we disagree with them. We take Michael to be a created angel. Now this passage, Jude 9, Brian referred to it in an earlier class. Jude 9 refers to the body of Moses. What is the body of Moses here? There are two main views that people hold. Brian?
I've always assumed that it was the body of Moses was brought to heaven, and the devil said, "What is this? What are you doing here? Flesh and blood cannot come in here, and this is flesh and blood, and yet Christ had not died."
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever read that anywhere? I just reckon that's what they're arguing about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree with you, Brian. I think it's a very good explanation. It wasn't the question, though. The question was, what is the body of Moses? And some people say the body of Moses is the Pentateuch. You know, like a body of literature.
The law.
The law. The five books, first five books of the Bible. But Brian's saying it is the physical body of Moses. And that's definitely right. And the devil is contending here because he says that Moses is a sinner. And Moses is condemned by his own law. And that's why Moses is buried here in Moab, buried by God too, and not in the land of promise because he sinned. He struck the rock in anger. Therefore, his body belongs to me. And the explanation of this is that Christ hasn't yet come and atoned for Moses' sins. There was no historical, legal basis for God's ownership of the body of Moses. And Michael's response was, when he was contending with the devil about the body of Moses, he did not make some railing accusation against him. Even though he's an archangel, he said, "The Lord rebuke thee." Now, why do you think the word archangel is appropriate here and the archangel Michael is mentioned here? What is there about Jude 9 that indicates that Michael is very powerful?
He was at least the same level or almost the same level as Lucifer.
Yeah.
And therefore, he couldn't rebuke him directly because he was at least the same as him or slightly higher.
Michael here was on a par or nearly so with Satan, and a lesser angel wouldn't have been up to it. And the practical lesson, which is actually why Jude mentions this battle between Michael and the devil, the practical lesson of this passage, why it's brought up in this context in Jude, is to prove the need for respect for leaders in the church and even the angelic world. Verse 8 talks about filthy dreamers who defile the flesh and despise dominion, reject authority, and speak evil of those whom God has put in high office. And then the argument is, but even Michael the archangel, dealing with the devil himself, wouldn't rail against him. Then verse 10 says, but these fools, evil men, speak evil of things they don't even really understand or know about. And they're like brute beasts, and they corrupt themselves. This is dealing with the evil trait of some, even who sneak into the church, that respect and honour for those in authority isn't in them. And those here who can't keep the fifth commandment and honour those in authority are also described as homosexuals. Verse 7 refers to Sodom and Gomorrah and those who give themselves over to fornication, that's sexual sins, and going after strange flesh. Men should be with women and women with men, and when they don't go, when men with men and women with women, that strange flesh are set forth for an example to all who do that in the future, and they suffer the vengeance of eternal fire. Then verse 8 says, likewise also these filthy dreamers defile the flesh. So the apostates and wicked here who sneaked into the church, these ungodly men mentioned in verse 4, are homosexuals in the church, and they also, 8b, despise dominion and speak evil of dignities. So their sodomy and their rebellion against authority and overweening pride go hand in hand. They have no respect because they're given over by God sovereignly to a reprobate mind, and indeed they are reprobate, as verse 4 teaches, and they have Sodom and Gomorrah as their example of hellfire. So that's the first reference to archangels. Second passage, the archangel Michael rather, the second passage is Revelation 12, also cited, mentioned earlier. Revelation 12 verse 7 refers to Michael. Revelation 12 verse 7, and there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon being Satan, and the dragon fought and his angels. And then it says that no place was found any more in heaven for the dragon and his angels, and the great dragon, verse 9, was cast out. Oh.
Just two questions in the next one. Could you say something about what form that the fight actually took? And secondly, do you think there's any casualties at all?
First question, as to the form or way in which these saints battled, that's a really big question. We'll probably deal with that when we come to spiritual warfare, when we get to the demons. And then the second question, were there any fatalities? Well, devils and even good angels can't be killed. They haven't got bodies to die as we do. So there weren't any fatalities in that sense, but there were definite losers. They were cast out of heaven. Now this passage, Revelation 12, verse 7 and following, the expulsion of Satan and his demons from heaven, is not the fall of Satan prior to the fall of man. This is the casting out of Satan from heaven upon the ascension of Jesus Christ. Satan was cast out of heaven over 4,000 years after his first sin. And we prove, very obviously, that Satan had access to heaven and wasn't expelled from it in the early chapters of the book of Job, where Job comes into heaven and God assembles him and God asks him what he's been up to. And what did Job do in heaven? What did Satan do in heaven? Revelation 12 verse 10 says that Satan during the Old Testament age was, I'm looking at the last third or so of Revelation 12 verse 10, the accuser of our brethren, which accused them before our God day and night. And this is what you have in Zechariah 3, but more obviously and simply in the book of Job. Satan comes up to God. God says, have you seen my servant Job? There's none like him, a righteous man, eschews evil and fears me. And then the devil accuses him, no, he only follows you for what he can get out of it. And then God says, okay, tell you what, you afflict him terribly, and I will show you that my irresistible grace, that he serves me because he loves me. And so the devil takes away, with God's righteous permission and decree, his health and his children and his wealth, and he still loves God. He's the accuser of the brethren. And the devil had access to heaven in the Old Testament age, because Christ had not yet come, and the legal basis for our salvation had not been established historically. And then when Christ comes into heaven, the ascension's mentioned in Revelation 12 verse 5, Satan is cast out, atonement has been made, and there's no longer any legal basis, even historically and obviously, for his accusations. Another proof of that, Jude 9, see that the devil is contending with the archangel Michael about the physical body of Moses. You've no right to this body, God, because Christ hasn't made atonement. Now there's more on Michael and this war in heaven in three sermons on Revelation 12 on our website, on the woman and the dragon in the New Testament sermon series section. But we're particularly interested in this idea that Michael is an archangel. The phrase, or rather word, archangel is not used of Michael in this passage. But what is there in this passage, Revelation 12 verse 7 and following, that accords with the truth and supports the case that Michael is an archangel?
And the last word would suggest that he oversees the angels, because it says Michael and his angels, which is that he was in fact
Michael and his angels. They're his angels, they're under him, he's their commander, and that's the idea of a ruler or prince among the angels, an archangel. What else is there in this passage that supports and confirms Jude's statement that Michael is an archangel? Staying in verse 7, Michael here is again, like Jude 9, put on a par with the devil in terms of strength. There's Michael and his angels fighting against the devil and his angels, therefore the two are, roughly speaking, on a par. An archangel. So far then, we've mentioned two passages that refer to Michael by name, Jude 9 and Revelation 12 verse 7. Where else do we read of Michael in the Bible? Julian?
Daniel 12:1,
yep. And we'll look at Daniel 10 first. This is the passage we read earlier. Daniel 10 verse 21 calls Michael, the very last words of Daniel 10, Michael, your prince. To what does your refer?
It's a general consensus, I think, that Michael is the archangel that looks after, or looked after, or still looks after the Jewish people.
Okay, yeah, your here refers to Israel, which is the people of God, which is the church. Mm-hmm. Michael is your prince, the prince who looks after you, the church. And then prince is the equivalent to
archangel.
Daniel 10 verse 13, the other use of the word Michael in this chapter, calls him, Michael, one of the chief princes. It's the same word, prince, in verse 21, and it says there's a plurality of them. Princes. And he's one of the word chiefs added there too. He's one of the chief princes. And have we any other candidates for chief princes on the good side?
We have, yes. Someone else like that?
Oh, you're...
Okay, with Gabriel.
Gabriel, okay. So...
And Lucifer.
Sorry?
And Lucifer.
And Lucifer, on the good side though.
Oh, okay, Gabriel.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So what is Michael doing in Daniel 10, what's he doing?
We're looking for a verb.
Not necessarily the verb found in the passage, but a verb that sums up his activity. What he's essentially doing.
He leads the army.
Yeah, he leads the army. He's fighting. Michael is fighting. He is fighting against the high-ranking demonic powers who are opposing Israel, the people of God. That comes through in verse 13 and in verses 20 through 21.
You'll probably go on to Gabriel, but it's interesting in the battle with Satan that it was only Michael and his angels that fought against Satan and his angels and Gabriel, who we said a few weeks ago possibly had up another third of the angels, but they took no part in it. You know, they all had a round it and Satan's angels taking maybe got it and so that a bit quicker, you know.
Well,
don't fight so much, maybe the threat of the big numbers might have scared them off.
Aye. Well, I think the key thing in the expulsion of the devil from heaven in Revelation 12 isn't the numbers that are against him, it's the fact that Christ has ascended. And even if all the angels on the good side had teamed up, it still would have taken the ascension of Christ. Yeah. And this is only a tentative thing, you know, that sort of two, and there's range down there because we're not too sure, but it would fit, it's a possibility. Yeah. So Daniel 12 verse 1. The third mention of the name Michael in Daniel says, at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince. That's the same word prince in all three verses in Daniel that refer to Michael. He's called the prince and one of the chief princes, and here the great prince. He will stand up, the great prince, standing up for the children of thy people. And what's he doing here? He's fighting, defending the people of God, and in the context, he's defending the people of God at the very end of the world. Because that verse goes on to speak about great tribulation, and then the next verse goes on to talk about the resurrection, the general resurrection, some to everlasting life, the resurrection of the just, and some to shame and everlasting contempt, the resurrection to damnation. And then the eternal reward, verse 3, of shining as the stars forever and ever. Michael. Let's come to Gabriel. Some questions. A question, first of all. Gabriel is mentioned by name in only one Old Testament book, which is
Daniel.
Yes, it's the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 8 this time. Daniel 8 verse 16, which therefore is the first biblical reference to an angel by name in all the Bible. Daniel 8 verse 16 says, and I heard a man's voice between the banks of Ulai, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. I think Daniel 8 is the next chapter the men's Saturday night meeting is going to be dealing with. It's the one that presents a goat with two horns, one horn being higher than the other one, which goat symbolizes the Medo-Persian Empire, two horns, sort of like the Austro-Hungarian Empire, it's a joint empire. It's the ram, first of all. The ram comes with two horns, then a goat comes with one great horn, the one great horn being Alexander the Great. And then the Greeks defeat the Medes and the Persians, and they are the second and third kingdoms, world kingdoms mentioned in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7. So what does the angel Gabriel then come by God's command to do? Daniel sees the vision of the ram which is then defeated by the goat. And God sends Gabriel to Daniel to make him understand the vision. He interprets and explains it. And Gabriel says that the ram with two horns, the Medes and the Persians, verse 20, the goat is the Greek world kingdom, and the one great horn that comes up is the Alexander the Great, and then four kingdoms come up after that. That's the division of the Greek kingdom into four bits, and then comes a type of Antichrist, Antiochus Epiphanes. Oh, that's a bit much for you to get now, but we're looking at Gabriel in the light of this. The second reference to Gabriel is Daniel 9, verse 21. Daniel 9, verse 21, "Yea, whiles I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel," that doesn't deny he's an angel, it means he comes in the form of a man, "whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning," reference to chapter 8, "being caused to fly swiftly," fly, wings, angel, not just a man, "touched me about the time of the evening oblation," or offering. And Daniel 9, you'll remember, is that chapter in which Daniel humbles himself for all the sins of Israel and says that we deserve to be in the Babylonian captivity. He prays that God will have mercy upon them. Then the angel Gabriel comes and tells Daniel that just as you, Daniel, have been prompted to pray because you read about the 70 years of Babylonian captivity in the book of Jeremiah 25, chapter 26, 29, I'm going to tell you about the 70 sevens, the 70 weeks, and about the cross when Christ is cut off for our sins, and the destruction of Jerusalem, which took place in AD 70. So in both visions, Gabriel comes to in both instances, Gabriel comes to help Daniel to understand things. An interpretive angel. Now, I personally believe that in chapter 10, verses 10 and following, though not named, that the one who touches Daniel, puts his hand upon him and makes Daniel come up on his knees with his palms to the ground, Daniel's face down on the ground after a vision, I believe, in the earlier verses of the glory of Jesus Christ, pre-incarnate. So he's lying flat on his face and the angel comes and touches him and he gets up and he's sort of down on his knees with the palms of his hands on the ground. And that one who speaks to him and explains things to him and talks about Michael, that one is Gabriel too. I believe that because similar words and works are referred to the character in Daniel 10 verse 10 following as at the end of chapter 9 and the end of chapter 8. But be that as it may, so it may now that Gabriel is mentioned in chapters 8, 9 and 10.
Are there any evidence that he's an archangel, or are we just assuming?
Julian's question is, have we evidence that Gabriel is an archangel? And the evidence goes like this. That Daniel 10 verse 13 refers to Michael as one of the chief princes. And of course, Michael is a prince, an archangel, so there's one of them. There's more than one. And then we're saying that this Gabriel is likely to be more than one because he is the only other angel that's mentioned by name. So if, for instance, there were other angels which were higher than Gabriel, if there were other chief princes higher than Gabriel, why would Gabriel be mentioned by name when higher ranking angels than him weren't mentioned by name? That's the argument. But I appreciate that is not entirely conclusive. I mean, it's not conclusive in the way that Michael's definitely an archangel because Jude 9 says it in so many words. And then sometimes it's comforting too to know that if you have to be wrong, you're wrong in good company. And just about everybody says that Gabriel is a an archangel. And those who don't say that he probably is an archangel. So I think I've covered myself there. Good question, though, to clear that up. So Gabriel is mentioned by name in only one Old Testament book. How many New Testament books does he mention then?
He's in Luke.
And that's the only one. He's in Luke chapter 1. And to whom does the angel Gabriel appear in Luke chapter 1?
Mary.
And Zacharias. He makes two appearances. Let's turn to that chapter. Luke 1. Luke 1 verse 19. Gabriel says to Zacharias, I am Gabriel, that stand in the presence of God, and I am sent to speak unto thee, and to show thee these glad tidings.
That might be said as further evidence that he's very important, the fact that he's sent to bring such important news.
Yes, I think so. Yep. And this passage in Luke verses 11 through 21, the angel comes to Zacharias to inform him about the birth of John the Baptist. And then the next passage in Luke 1, verses 26 through 38, the angel Gabriel is sent 6 months later to a virgin espoused to Joseph, and her name was Mary. So the angel comes to the Blessed Virgin Mary to inform her of the birth of Jesus Christ. So a quick quiz then on Gabriel. Three people visited by Gabriel. Daniel, Zacharias, and Mary. And Daniel had the angel come to him either by his physical eyes or spiritual eyes two or three times, whereas Zachariah and Mary only had it once. The first person he appeared to that we know of is Daniel, and the last person he appeared to is the Virgin Mary. Here's a harder one. To what three places was the angel sent? If he was sent to Daniel, where was he sent? In Mesopotamia. By the river Tigris, for instance, in Daniel chapter 10. If he was sent to Zacharias, where was he sent? In the temple. Even more precisely, the temple in Jerusalem, more precisely than that, where in the temple? Just outside the Holy of Holies, by the altar of incense, in the holy place that's near the Holy of Holies. And to the Virgin Mary, he went to what? Her home. Yeah, and where's that? In Nazareth, in Galilee. Now, we've gone fairly quickly tonight, because I've been studying this all day, and actually quite a lot of time in the last few weeks, because I've been trying to grasp the meaning of the latter chapters of Daniel, and it wasn't so easy. It's very rewarding work. So we've been going quick, because I studied more and needed more material, and wanted to make sure we cover it all. But I want us all to have pretty much straight what we said about Michael and what we said about Gabriel, because now we're going to step up a level and compare what we've seen about Michael and Gabriel. So we've got this stuff about Michael and Gabriel. Let's compare them. Both Michael and Gabriel are good angels. They are archangels. That's our working hypothesis. They are the only two named good angels. And both of them are mentioned together in only one biblical book, namely Daniel. What about the meaning of their names? Anybody know what Michael or Gabriel means?
I'm guessing here that Gabriel means messenger.
Nope.
Ministry.
Nope. Good guess though.
Well, something of God.
Yes, both of them ending in E-L means God. Yep.
Sent of God and all of God.
Good enough guesses. Yep. By the way, since there's E-L at the end of the biblical ones, all the Roman Catholic angels that they make up are apocryphal angels. They're Uriel with an E-L or Raphael. Yeah. Well, Michael means who is like God. Who is like God? Have we read Psalm 89? Psalm 89, 5 through 9. And verse 5 refers to the heavens as praising God and the congregation of saints extolling his faithfulness. Saints there meaning holy ones. Then verse 6 says, the sons of God, or the mighty ones, they praise God. And then verse 6 says, for who is like God in the heavens? Who is like God? And then verse 7, the meeting of the saints. That's the angels and the Lord of hosts. The hosts are the angels. And it asks in verse 8, which God, who is in mightiness like God? So Michael is who is like God. And Gabriel means mighty one of God. So they're both about God. One asks by his name, who is like God? And the other one is a mighty one of God. As regards the work, what's Michael's work? From the various passages we looked at. He's a defender. He's a fighter. He's into warfare. And immediately some of you here are liking that guy. You think he's my sort of man. He fights against Satan. Revelation 12, Michael and his angels fight against Satan and his angels. In Jude 9, he's contending with Satan over the body of Moses. And in Daniel 10, he is fighting against the leading fallen angels, the princes amongst the angels. So he fights. Now that one was relatively easy. What does Gabriel do?
This is ministry and interpreting things for taking messages. It's more of that.
He brings messages. Mm-hmm. Now think of all the messages in Daniel and in Luke. What do his messages pertain to in all those passages? Can you see any commonalities here?
They're always prophetic.
They're always prophetic. They all pertain to the future. Daniel 8 is an interpretation of the next two kingdoms, the Medes and the Persians, and then the Greeks. Daniel 9 is a prophecy of the 70 times 7 and the cross of Christ and what we now know as AD 70, the fall of Jerusalem. Daniel 10, if we assume that Gabriel is the one there who helps, strengthens Daniel and explains things to him. In Daniel 10, he conveys the prophecy of Daniel 11, which deals with Antiochus Epiphanes and the warfare between the kings of the north and the kings of the south. And then in Luke 1, he prophesies the birth of John the Baptist and John's work. And in Luke 1, he prophesies the birth of Jesus Christ and his kingdom. So he brings messages pertaining to the future. Now in the book of Daniel, those messages, are they good messages or bad messages? By that I mean, are they messages that would encourage you or cause you grief? In the book of Daniel. All of the messages in Daniel have to do with suffering. Yeah, suffering. Suffering. Suffering for the afflicted people of God. What about the messages in Luke? Good news. Good news about birth. The birth of two special boys and the coming of the New Testament kingdom of God. I was in a Bible study in the States, and there was a girl there, and she called Gabriel the good news angel. The good news angel. And he certainly is that in Luke, the good news angel. Now, which of the two archangels, the two good archangels who are named, which of the two would you say is greater?
I would be inclined to say Gabriel.
Brian says Gabriel. Okay. And you'll say Michael, Julian? Uh-huh. Or is it just because Brian has been close but got so many wrong this evening that if he says that, the other one's bound to be right?
I think they're both the same.
Julian, are you going to make arguments for yours or Brian for yours?
If you're ahead of the armies of heaven, that puts you in a very high position. Whereas, you know, Gabriel's speaking to individuals. Yes, he's saying great things, but he's speaking to individuals. Whereas Michael is fighting with a huge host. That's why I put him higher up.
And I think that Gabriel has the most privileged message out of all of the angels to bring to the earth, the birth of Christ. There is no greater.
That's
and
a very good
God
point.
Would not have given that to a lesser man.
Okay, so Brian's arguing that Gabriel is greater because Gabriel was given the greatest message about the birth of the Son of God, which is a very good argument. But you realise now that the two of them are arguing, the two of them are essentially correct, but they're arguing in slightly different planes. And so the answer to the question is, in what sort of plane was I speaking? And my question, though, you're not to be faulted, Brian, for going for that one, you made a very good argument for it. I was thinking about greater in that the way the Bible presents them, for instance, as Julian says, as regards Michael, his angels. And then Michael is the one who is said in two places directly to oppose Satan, Jude 9 and Revelation 12. And then when Jude 9 wants to talk about the greatest example that they can think of somebody really high in an argument, but not even getting scrappy towards those in authority, it says, and even Michael, the archangel, didn't, you know, revile Satan, but said, the Lord rebuke thee. And Michael is the only one actually called an archangel. So Brian, I like your argument, but at least in the way in which I was answered that, I have to go with Julian. But you allowed some comeback, though.
You gave me wrong.
Can I add something else? It's
sure.
A bit contentious, but there is another place that talks about an archangel in Scripture, 1 Thess 4:16.
Yes.
The voice of the archangel, which actually brings to the end of time.
Uh-huh.
I think that's Michael.
Okay.
Because it fits with what we read in Daniel.
Uh-huh.
About in Revelation, where it talks about the suffering at the end of the age and then the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
So the voice of the archangel at the end of the world could well be Michael.
Julian, I agree with what you've been saying, and I want to let those know in case that there be. I can see a little bit of doubt behind the eyes of a few people here, and they think that I've goofed up. 1 Thessalonians 4:16 is on the next page, and I should say I didn't mention 1 Thessalonians 4:16 because it doesn't mention a name, but it does mention archangel, and that's why I left it at the end. Julian's sharp and he's with us, very good. Now here's one quick one. If Michael is greater, at least in the sense in which I've been arguing from that perspective, Daniel 10, the last verse of Daniel 10, Daniel 10 verse 21 and Daniel 11 verse 1 say something about their relative strengths. Now as I've said, I believe that the interpretive angel, though he's not named in Daniel 10 verse 10 following, is Gabriel. And if we follow that, then verse 21, Daniel 10 verse 21, I will show thee that which is noted in the scripture of truth. Gabriel speaking. There is none that holdeth with me in these things, but Michael, your prince. So here's Gabriel saying, there's none that holdeth with me Literally, there's none who upholds me in these things but Michael, your prince. So Gabriel hears warring. He does a wee bit of that too, and Michael's, you know, and he says that Michael's upholding him. So Gabriel's being upheld and strengthened and assisted by Michael. And then Daniel 11 verse 1, and also I, which I take it, many commentators would disagree with me here, but also I, Gabriel, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and to strengthen him, Michael. So the previous verse, Gabriel says, Michael strengthens me. And in the next verse, chapter 11, verse 1, and I stood and confirmed and strengthened him. So, Michael, but the two assist and complement and help and strengthen each other. All of that, of course, depends on the right identification of the speaker in those verses. And as I've indicated, not all would agree with me on that, but I think at the very least I can put up a good case, but we'll see. Now, Michael, does his name suit him?
I thought when you gave the description of the matter of being reversed.
Now that's interesting.
After the way he described.
Uh-huh. Philip makes the point that the work and the names of Michael and Gabriel would seem, from a certain perspective, to be better suited the other way around. See, if you look at it this way though, you're right, but obviously God put the names of the two of them for a reason, and you weren't wanting to deny that. If Michael is a good angel and an archangel, and in the way in which you describe, the greatest good angel, so the most powerful, the strongest, and yet his name is who is like God. In other words, the greatest, most powerful created being. And his name is who is like God. Then that point's even better, mate. And then Gabriel, you know, Gabriel, the mighty one of God, you would think, well, that's the one who's going to be doing the fighting. But if Gabriel is the mighty one of God, and yet God sends him to bring messages to his people, then it shows the power of God. So then both the names are more about who God is and the way in which they reveal God than what they actually reveal about themselves.
When you say who is like God, are you saying it as a question? Or are you saying who is like God? Is the name a question?
The name is a question, but a very special type of question, a rhetorical question.
Okay.
Who is like God? In other words, nobody. So Michael, the greatest created being, we look around Christ here, even as human nature, that he's a different category, but he's God and man. And when he, the greatest created being, terribly awesome in power, you know, who is like God? You know, we're sitting out of, you know, the whole scene to Satan, because he's not a great good angel. And so we see from these two angels, Michael and Gabriel, and their names, that they're both ministering spirits, one chiefly fighting and the other one chiefly bringing messages, but they're both ministering spirits sent forth for those who shall be the heirs of salvation. Belgic Confession 12 says that God also created the angels good to be his messengers, to do messages. And so Michael fights for us and defends us, and Gabriel especially brings these messages. They're both messengers, the two greatest good angels, the two archangels. Now, we've talked about various classifications of the angels. The archangels, with Michael in that sense being greater than Gabriel. The two archangels are obviously over the other angels, or at least Michael as an archangel is over the other angels, because we read in Revelation 12 of his angels. How do we relate the two good archangels to the other ranks and classifications? How do we relate them to cherubs and seraphs? You know, is Gabriel a seraph and Michael a cherub or something? Who can say? How do we relate the archangels to the principalities and powers and thrones and dominions? think you'd have to say that the archangels were above those things. Or possibly at one of those classifications is the same thing, you know, maybe principalities or thrones is the same thing as an archangel. But most, if not all, would actually have to be under them. But then, you know, how do you get a power structure there without arrows coming down? Who knows? Who knows? I think a lot of the issue with the angels is to try and understand, you know, how far can we go and where we must stop. Now finally, we should pick up on Julian's remark, 1 Thessalonians 4 verse 16, which is I left till the end, because though it mentions archangels, doesn't mention Michael or Gabriel by name. And so having looked at Michael and the angel and compared and Michael and Gabriel and compared and contrasted them, now we can ask which of the two archangels, assuming it isn't a third one who's unnamed, which of the two is most likely intended by 1 Thessalonians 4 verse 16. That verse states, "For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first." And this verse, by the way, is one of the classic, obvious verses against the secret rapture, because it's one of the noisiest verses in all the Bible, because it says that when the Lord descends, then we, verse 17, are raptured and brought up to meet him in the air. But when the Lord descends, there are three noises. Verse 16, he descends from heaven with a shout, which isn't silent. Two, with the voice of an archangel. And if you read the book of Revelation, they can make some noise. And three, with the trump or trumpet of God. And then verse 17, the classic verse in all the Bible about the rapture comes. So the question then is, this voice of archangel, also how do the three sounds relate to each other? We're not so much interested in that now. But the archangel, who do we think the archangel is? Julian?
Michael.
Julian thinks Michael. Reasons?
Because it fits exactly with Daniel 12, 1 and 2. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people. So he's there in the tribulation, there with God's people, and says he shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. So it's immediately into the resurrection there.
Yes, I think that's exactly it. Very good. Any more comments or questions before we go to prayer?